All right, for those of you who don't know me, because some of you guys are from outside of our church, my name is Noel. I'm one of the pastors here. Most of the people here are from Riverview, but we've also got some people from around Lansing. We've got some people from around the state who are here, and we actually have some people from Ohio, I think, that are here that came. Yeah. Oh, right there. Some people from Ohio. How about that? So some people have trickled in, so we'll kind of talk to all you guys a little bit later. Just want to give you a couple logistics of what's going on here today. We're going to do our best to run everything on schedule, even though we're already running late. And you guys are adults, so you'll have to figure it out as we go, because once we leave this session, we're not all back together again until the last main session at 1 o'clock. And so you're going to have to jump from place to place, figure out where you have to go based on the schedule that you have, and to try to be on time as much as possible. When we get into the workshops, there's about a 15-minute gap between workshops, and we really do need to swap rooms pretty fast. And so if you're leading a workshop, please remember to try to end on time, and then we're going to flip-flop those rooms. If you don't know where rooms are, especially if you're from outside of our church, just look up as you wander around the building, and there's numbers on the wall. And if you have no idea, if you can't find those numbers, grab somebody else, and somebody should be able to point you in the direction of where we need to go. I want to give a couple lunch instructions now. I know lunch is not happening yet, but we just need to know what's happening with lunch. First of all, lunch is happening in two places. If you signed up for the Church Planters Luncheon, that's happening down in the chapel on that wing. And if you did not sign up for that luncheon, you're eating lunch down here. But all the lunches will be in boxes down here. So you've got to come down here, get your lunch, and then either go to the chapel if you're part of the church planting luncheon or stay here. If you have dietary restrictions and you told us about your dietary restrictions, then you have a lunch sitting there with your name on it. Take that lunch, and please don't take somebody else's lunch with somebody else's name on it, because we have just a few very specific dietary restrictions, and so only take those lunches if that's you. They're back there. Also, if you have not paid for this thing yet, you can go to any one of the two kiosks in the lobby, swipe your card, and there's a place that says lead, and that just kind of helps us pay for the lunch and childcare and all that kind of stuff that we've got to do. And so let's pray, and then let's dive in. So just actually, let's do this. Grab somebody next to you, pray with them for like a minute or so, and then I'll close up, and then we'll dive right in. Okay, so the last time we did this, the first lead that we did back in January, February, we asked everybody what they liked about it and what they didn't like about it and all that kind of stuff, and by far, the thing that people liked the most was the practical stuff. The stuff that really helped them kind of decide what to do next and where to go next and, you know, just little nuts and bolts things. And so we asked specifically in an email that we sent out to all the people who came last time, what specifically would you like to hear this time around? It was so specific that we could almost not double up the responses. And that's how much everyone needed something practically for them. Everybody who gave us their answers, they were very detailed answers about different things that they were wrestling with or they needed to help them with where they were going. And so we tried to kind of go through this. Dan and I actually sat on an airplane and tried to sort through all of these responses and figure out what should we do with this time. And what we saw were a couple themes. There were two big themes that we're going to hit during the main sessions. And then we had a bunch of smaller themes, which is the workshops that you guys are signed up for. And so the bigger themes that we're going to tackle today is Steve at the end is going to talk about kind of the downside of leadership, how when things go bad, when things are rough, what the things that we will have to face that are difficult as leaders. And then the session that I'm going to do right now is trying to answer the question, what do I do next? And I'm going to try to answer that in a general way for everybody, so that you, in a specific way, can figure out what do I do next. And so that's, I'm going to try to get that specific with it as much as we possibly can during the session. So if you guys have this booklet with you, Christy told me I think I have 11 pages of notes that I'm going to attempt to go through in the next 30 minutes. So we'll see if I can actually pull this off. But basically, we're going to just kind of look at this concept of reverse engineering your life. I don't know if you guys seen the pictures of the iPhone 4 that are out. You know me, I'm a tech junkie, okay? Apparently, somebody who worked for Apple left an iPhone 4 in a bar. And they tried to return it several times. They were unsuccessful in returning it. And so they ended up selling it for like $5,000 or something to a tech blog. The tech blog guys took it apart so they could figure out what the new one would do. And as soon as the actual iPhone 4 comes out, someone in China will have it within minutes. They will take it apart. They will reverse engineer it, figure out what it does and how it does it, and then they'll start creating knockoffs. And this is the concept of reverse engineering. And what we're going to talk about in this session is how to reverse engineer your life, to start with an end product in mind and to move yourself through your life to end up with that end product. And so let's look at these passages here. In 2 Timothy 4, Paul writes, he says, I am already being offered and the time of my departure is come. He's basically saying, I'm about to die. That's the simple thing of the way he's saying it. He goes, I'm dying. The time of my departure has come. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the course. I have kept the faith. Henceforth, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness with the Lord. The righteous judge shall give to me at the end of the day. And he'll continue on there. But basically, he's saying we're all going to die. And he's saying he's at the end of his life. And he's saying, I'm going to die. Paul is writing this from prison. And he sees the writing on the wall. He sees that he's not going to get out of prison. And he says, this is it. I have made it to the end of this particular race. I've been with a lot of people who are dying. And they generally fall into one of two camps. There's the camp that says, I'm ready for this. And the camp that says, I'm not ready for this. And this is regardless of whether they're a Christ follower or not. Sometimes it has to do with their eternities. Sometimes it has to do with just regrets. There's a lot of Christians that I've been with at the end of their life when they're dying who basically say, I'm not ready. And when you ask them why, they say, well, I want to do this, and I want to do this, and I still haven't done this, and I regret that I never got around to this. And they kind of list all of these things. There's the people who say, I am ready to die, and those who say, I am not ready to die. Paul was in the first camp. Look what he says. He says, I have fought the good fight. He says, I have finished the course. I have kept the faith. See, he's going through this at the end of his life. He's looking back and he says, I'm ready. I've done those things that I set out to do. And that whole passage he's just saying, this is where I'm at right now. Now, let me give you one caveat in this whole thing. In the book of James, it says, none of us know what's going to happen tomorrow or the next day or next week. And so we make our plans and we shouldn't just say, well, I'm going to go to this city or go to that city. But we should say, Lord willing, these are things that are going to happen because things can change in our lives. But at the same time, Paul, I believe, lived his life incredibly intentionally so that he could say this. The reason I know that is if you go to 1 Corinthians, which happened about a decade and a half before he wrote 2 Timothy, he said this, do you not know that in a race all the runners run, but only one receives the prize? So run that you may obtain it. Every athlete exercises self-control in all things. They do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. So I do not run aimlessly. I do not box as one beating the air, but I discipline my body and I keep it under control, lest after preaching to others, I myself should be disqualified. See, Paul, I love his term at the end where he says, I discipline my body. That phrase is, he actually says, I pummel my body. He says, I pummel my body and I make my body my slave. And this whole passage in 1 Corinthians 9, he had been talking about his mission proclaiming the gospel. And he's like, I am disciplining myself. I'm disciplining myself so I can do this. And I love a word that's used earlier in 1 Corinthians 9. There's this word herald he uses. When he talks about what he does and he's calling other people to this. This is the same word that would describe somebody who would call all the runners on a race to the starting line. And so I get this image in 1 Corinthians 9 that Paul is basically saying, okay, everybody to the starting line. And then he says, I'm going to beat you. Because he says, I'm going to run this race. This is how I'm going to run it. And then he takes off. That's kind of the image that I get out of this passage. Has anybody here ever run a marathon? One, two, three. Okay. Anybody here think they could run a marathon today? He could. Man, bold. You could run a marathon today. You think you could do it? Why? What makes you think you can run a marathon? You're physically in shape. What's the longest you've ever run? 8 miles. Okay. One of my marathon people, he's run 8 miles. Can he run a marathon? Good luck now. Now, wait a minute. If he took this 8 miles and he tried to eke that up by about a mile every 3 or 4 months, easy at the end of that to run the marathon? okay, every couple weeks. So if he strategically planned it so that every couple weeks he could run another mile, then he could easily get to running a marathon. Do you see what he's saying? This is what Paul is saying, the same thing. This is what we do. This is disciplining our lives. This is saying, today I can't run a marathon, but I can run 8 miles. But I can run a marathon if I do these certain steps. John Ortberg says it this way. He says, discipline is any activity I can do by direct effort that will help me do what I cannot now do by direct effort. I love that. Because the starting point is understanding what you cannot do today. What can you not do today that you want to be able to do today? What is that goal? And then you do something else by direct effort that gets you to be able to do this thing over here. That's reverse engineering your life. That's looking at your life at the end and saying, at the end, I want to be able to run a marathon. So what do I need to do today and tomorrow and the next day and the next month and next year to be able to run that marathon? It's looking at the end in mind. And by the way, I stole pretty much every single thing that I'm going to teach today from somebody. And I just want to be upfront about that because it dawned on me. I'm looking down and I see a bunch of names. I've stolen stuff from Mark Driscoll, Dale Burke, Larry Osborne, Merlin Mann, Tim Ferriss, who thinks you should only work 4 hours a week, and I think he's full of it, but he's got other great things to say. I stole from a lot of people, and there's nothing original here. I'm going to try to quote every single person as much as I can, but I'm sure I'm forgetting some people, so take that for what it's worth. Here's what we want to do. I think that if we're going to actually run the race so that we get somewhere, instead of just running aimlessly, like Paul says, instead of canoeing like my wife down the river, like this, but actually getting somewhere. My wife and I canoed together once. We'll never canoe together again. Because I see the end of the river, and I'm like, that's where we're going. She sees that bank, and then that bank, and that bank, and then that bank. She runs aimlessly. See, we want to, in order to get somewhere, she's not here today, so I can say that. We need to start with a basic understanding of who we are. And the reason I say basic is because in America, we like to spend so much time trying to figure out who we are that we consume ourselves of figuring ourselves out instead of actually getting around to doing anything. So I'm going to give you 3 questions I think you need to know about yourself in a basic way. And it's my belief it should take you about an hour to figure these things out, maybe 2. If you spend more than that, you're wasting your time, okay? Let me give you the 3 questions. Who am I? That's the first question. Rick Warren has this great thing he calls having a shape. Each one of us has a spiritual gifts. We have spiritual gifts, heart, abilities, personality, experience. And here's the thing. Let's start at the top. Spiritual gifts. A lot of people like to have spiritual gift tests. They spend hours taking all these tests. Fine. If you want to do that, knock yourself out. But here's how you figure out your spiritual gift. You do stuff. And you try stuff. And then you find that you're good at stuff. See, a spiritual gift is something that God gives every Christ follower, has a spiritual gift or more than one spiritual gift, and I don't think you can know what it is until you do it. Because it's something you do supernaturally. It's not of your own power, so it's not necessarily your natural abilities. It may not be something you ever see in a person until they do it. Some of the best preachers that I know are introverts. And you would never find an introvert and tell them to get on stage and to preach. But some of them, they get up there and when they preach with power and it's amazing and God does amazing things. So you do this by trying stuff. Heart is what tugs at your heartstrings. What are those things that you just have to do? You know what they are. If you don't do them, they're going to drive you crazy. You have a heart for these things. Abilities. These are your natural abilities. The things you're naturally good at. Personality. I actually like the DISC test thing, but there's a million different personality things out there. You know your personality. You an extrovert? You an introvert? You a multitasker? You a single tasker? I'm a single tasker. I can only do one thing at a time. I have a sign I hang on my door that says do not disturb, because if I get interrupted when I'm trying to single task on something, I'm done. They say the average person gets interrupted every 11 minutes at their job. And it takes the average person 25 minutes to get back into a groove. If you're good at math, you'll figure out that's really bad. And I am not your average person. It probably takes me an hour to get back into my groove. And so I don't have push notifications on my phone. I I've got an iPhone, I've got an iPad, I've got all kinds of technology around me, and I don't have any push notifications. I don't give my phone number out to hardly anybody because I don't want people calling me and text messaging me all the time. And so my phone barely ever rings because only a few people have the number. And when I'm working on something, I turn it off because I'm a single tasker. See, it's your personality. You have to understand that about yourself. Experiences, each one of us has unique experiences that are different for each one of us. And you just have a basic understanding of who you are. Now, here's the reason why it's important. Flip to the second page. This guy that I had an opportunity to meet and he sit down, he did some coaching with me. His name is Dale Burke. And I love this diagram he put together. I think we have it up here. Do you have the diagram? He says, this is your life. On the outside is stuff that's not you. This is stuff that you do in your life and you just know I'm not good at this at all. For me, it'd be like playing the French horn. Not me. Don't know how to do it. Next, okay. You're okay at this stuff. When you do this, it's okay. This stuff right here, you're great at. Here is your optimum capability, okay? This is who we are and the things we do in our lives. And the reason we need to understand ourselves a little bit is because most of us start here with our lives. We spend most of our time doing stuff we're okay at and a little bit of time doing stuff we're terrible at and a little bit of stuff is stuff we're great at. That's where most of us start. And then through our lives, we move from there to there. We do more of all of those things. And we get busier and busier and busier and busier doing stuff that we're not good at. What we should do is we should shift that circle over there. And that's actually a little bit farther than we need to go. But what we should be doing, actually, yep, it dawned on me, I gave her the circle wrong. Stretch it out so that some of the stuff you're doing is okay. Because most of the stuff you should be doing is in your optimum capability. Some of the stuff you're doing should be stuff you're great at. And you should have to do a little bit of stuff you're okay at in your life. That's fine. But most of us never shift our worlds in that direction. So we get stressed out because we're doing all this stuff that we're not very good at. This is what he said. And I can't remember if he said it in this book or if he said it, I just wrote it down. He said, if you put the same amount of energy into your strengths instead of improving your weaknesses, you will excel. Think about that for a second. We tend to so much focus on our weaknesses, don't we? Trying to get better at weaknesses. And let me tell you what he's not saying by weaknesses. He's not saying your sin areas. Because in your sin areas or in places where you have bad character, you do need to put some energy into changing those and to work on your bad character, into working on your weaknesses. But if I spent all my time trying to figure out how to play the French horn, I would never have time to do this other stuff that I'm really good at. But if I took the stuff that I'm really good at and I spend more and more and more time doing that and put my energy into that, I'll just explode at what I'm able to do. And see, I really, really like that idea. Now, of course, some of you in your jobs or in your marriage or in your family, you're going to have to do stuff you're not good at. And you do have to put some time and energy into that because of the nature of that relationship or the nature of that job. That shouldn't just be what's consuming you all the time. Okay, flip to the third page. We're going to go to the second question. What are my roles? I think this is an important question to ask in your life, and here's why. You cannot do everything. And so many of us, we think we can do everything, and so we have so many things in life that we're trying to do. And it's good to sit down and just ask that question, what are my roles in life? Let me give you an example of roles. Christian. That should be in there somewhere for most of you. If Christian is not one of them, please come talk to me after the service and we'll clear that up. Christian should be one of these roles. I'm a Christian. I'm a husband. And I'm not just any husband, I am Grace Hakenen's husband. I am my wife's husband. That's a very, very unique role that nobody else plays. I'm a father. I'm a father not only just generically, but I'm a father to a 13-year-old girl and three boys. That's a very specific role. I'm also a pastor. Not just a pastor anywhere, I'm a pastor here. Now, for me, I have to pretty much stop there. Those are my primary roles in life. And one of the reasons I have to kind of stop at four as far as my primary roles is because I've decided to become a pastor, and I'm a pastor here at Riverview. And there's unique things here. For instance, we're a young church, which means high stress, low budget. that causes a little bit of a change in the world. Being a pastor is a kind of a 24/7 job. You got to kind of figure out how to live life while people are always kind of asking you about things, and you're mowing your lawn and you end up talking to somebody about something going on in their life. And it's part of the job of being a pastor. When I think about being a father to my kids, I've got a 13-year-old girl. Do I have to say anything more than that? She's awesome. I told her this morning in the car on the way here, because she volunteered to give up some other stuff she was going to do today to help with watching kids down there. And I was telling her that, I said, dude, you're spoiling me for teenagers. She's awesome. And she said, well, what's going to happen when the boys are teenagers? I said, I don't know. I mean, right now they're cute and they're little and they're starting to smell like boys and men, and it's weird. But the boys are all in baseball. In fact, one of my kids is in a baseball tournament today. In fact, he'll be on his way down there in a little bit. I'm going to miss one of his games today. I'm going to be out of here as soon as this is over to hit two more of his games. He's going to have his triple header at the tournament today. And so I'm going to leave here as fast as I can to go watch the other games, because baseball is an important part of my life. And we spend a lot of time between May and June playing and watching baseball. I'm married to my wife, Grace. And Grace is not high maintenance, but she's a private person. So she's a private person in a large church married to one of the pastors, which puts her in a fishbowl, which means a unique part of my job is protecting her and protecting her from people who are overly aggressive in her life. And that is part of my job. And my wife also cannot stand passive men. And so I have to be a strong leader in our home more than pretty much, I mean, you have to be a strong leader in your home anyway, men. We're going to talk about that about a month at church. But I have to be on that game because I'm married to Grace. And being a Christian, for me, it's really easy to be a professional Christian and just spend time in the Word when I'm preparing messages and stuff like that. And so when I look at those four roles, they pretty much define who I am. Those are the four things that I do. Now, there's some other minor things that have had to go out of my life. I love playing music. I'm a musician. I've played many instruments in my life. I don't play any anymore. I used to be an actor, loved doing that. I actually almost went to college to do musical theater. I don't do that anymore. Now, I love those things, but you can't do everything. So I had to decide that I'm no longer a musician, I'm no longer an actor, because I am all of these other things that I do. Now, I will say, as soon as I get a role in a zombie movie, I will be an actor again for a season, and all other roles go out the window until I'm done with the movie. I'll take a lead role, a bit role, I'll be a dead body, a zombie, anything. If I'm in a zombie movie, it's one of my life goals. And so I may leave for like 6 months if we're shooting, you know, in New Zealand. And I apologize to the church in advance, but I will be an actor again when I'm in the zombie movie. Then I'll come back and be a pastor. There's a couple other roles that I have that are going away this year. I speak at conferences. I'm not going to do that for a year. I am an author because I'm trying to write a book. I'm in the middle of working with that and my agent right now. Both of those are going away this year for 1 year because I'm adding a role. I'm going to be a student this year. I'm actually going back to school this year. And so that is something that I know. So I look at my year. I know that for 1 year, I'm going to have that role. So does that make sense? So what we do is we come up with all of our roles and we kind of lay them all out. Once we understand our roles, then we look at our cycles and seasons. This I stole from a guy named Bruce Miller. I love this. And Mark Brett quoted from this last time around, so I'm not going to spend a ton of time here. He said, Bruce Miller basically says, don't try to live a balanced life. Instead, understand the season of life you're in and the natural cycles of your life, and then live a life in rhythm. Here's what he means by that. So many of us are trying to balance life, and we're trying to figure out, okay, at all the times I need to balance work and play and family. And basically, it's not living like that. It's living, understanding that you have two things, seasons and cycles. And seasons are the unique opportunities you have right now that you won't have again. They come and go. Seasons. He calls it the brief moment in which something is possible. Like right now, I've got four kids at home. That's a season. I also understand that that this is the best season for me to go back to school as I've looked at the future and where we're headed as a church, even as my family. This is the season for that. There's not going to be another good time, which means that the book season is over. I had to shelve that. Had to call my agent, say, I'm not going to write the book right now. It goes on hold because I have to enter this season. It's understanding those unique opportunities that you have right now. Cycles are just your natural cycles of life. Everybody has them. It's important to understand yours. Like, what's your daily cycle? How much sleep do you need? See, 8 hours. She says 8 hours. I need seven. I thrive on eight. More than eight kills me. So if I get under seven, I'm really tired and crabby. But seven exactly I can live on. So I live on seven. And then I do eight on the weekends. And so that's kind of how I've learned that's part of my daily cycle. When is the best time for you to work? Are you a morning person? If you're a morning person, do your best work for the first third of your day. And then the second third of your day, or the non-optimal time, do that to play the other catch-up stuff if you've got to do. But the most important stuff goes into the optimal. So you got that, the daily cycle, weekly cycles. You know, there's like Sabbath. You know, the idea in the Bible that you work appropriately and you play, or you rest appropriately. I love the fact, the model in the Bible of working 6 days, taking a day off. I love that kind of concept. I think a lot of us work too hard or we rest too hard. And we have to kind of get that into an appropriate balance. What's your monthly cycle? What's your yearly cycle, your annual cycle? Like, for instance, many of us have kids in school. So, you know, I know that every year baseball will consume me from May till June. And so this year we're going to do a lot of vacation in July. You know, it's understanding all those things. Let's just keep going because I'm going to. So basically, once you've asked those three questions, and literally those three questions, like I said, should take you about an hour or two. Do not spend tons of time on it, but just have a basic understanding of who you are. Just ask yourself those questions and just try to think through your life. And then once you've done that, then you pick a day in the future as far out as you can possibly imagine. It has to be at least a year out. My wife and I have been talking about this a lot this week as I've been putting this together. My wife, she plans about 3 or 4 months in advance tops. It's a stretch for her to do a year, but I'm trying to get her to do a year. For me, I'm planning for December 8th, 2036. That's the day I turn 65. And I've been working on that day. And then from there, I'm able to back it up and work from, that's my iPhone 4 day. December 8th, 2036 is my iPhone 4 day. And then I back it up from there to today. And let me show you how you do this. You take each one of these main roles in your life and you ask yourself the question, will I still have this role on that day? If so, then you look at that day and you say, what do I look like in that role? If you're not doing it, ask yourself, why are you not doing it? Like, for instance, if you, you put up road barriers for a living with Spartan Barricade, you know, you go out there and you're like, I don't see myself doing that. Why not? Because it's not what I want to do. Why not? Begin to ask yourself those questions. And then you figure out those roles on that day. And you ask as many questions as possible about your life on that day. And this should take you days and weeks and maybe a month or two to accomplish. You just keep doing this. Let me give you some examples just from my life. And like I said, it may be very hard for you to do what I do, to look to December 8th, 2036. My wife is looking at a year from now for her, and we're looking at our goals together. She pretty much does not care what life looks like on 12, 8, 36. So she's allowed me to set the goals for us. And then we backtrack them from there. Like, for instance, I plan on being a Christian in December 8th, 2036. And I've asked myself as many questions as possible, what do I look like as a Christian on that day? Well, I want to have a deep understanding of the gospel, but I want a deep understanding of theology to be able to riff on theology and scripture and know enough scripture from memory that I'm able to know even what the trends are like even in 2036 and what are people talking about and be able to speak to that. I want to be really well read. I want to have a deep prayer life. And I've tried to imagine what I'm like as a Christian on that day. Other roles for me, my being a husband, I see myself married to my wife. That means a couple things. First of all, it means we're both alive. Right? Which means that I need to be healthy, and she needs to be healthy, and we need to be, I don't want one of us to die of heart disease because we're not taking care of ourselves now so that we're, on December 8th, 2036, we're not together anymore because one of us is dead. So I'm trying to figure some of that stuff out. I see myself married, I see us close together and not drifting apart and having the exact same future, our vision for what life is going to look like after 2036. And I see us traveling together. And I have all these images of what that's going to be like. As a father, I see myself, I got this from Larry Osborne. His goal with his children is that they love Jesus, they love the local church, and they're glad that their dad was a pastor. Because a lot of PKs, you know, kind of crash and burn. I love that. That is that's it with my kids. In December 8th, 2036, I want my kids to love Jesus, love the local church, and be glad that I had been a pastor. At that time, I also see myself as a grandpa. That's a new role. And one of my goals is I'd like to be part of discipling my grandchildren. Somehow. And so that means that my kids have to be Christ followers and they have to be pouring that into their kids. I look at being a pastor. I see myself retiring from paid ministry when I'm 65. Now, if the church wants to keep me around unpaid, that's cool. But I'd love to be able to not charge the church a dime and be able to be in a point financially where I can help with coaching of young pastors. I'd like to spend time speaking at conferences and writing books. After I'm 65, and I'd like to be able to not have to worry about an income stream at that point to pull that off. So that's how I envision that day. When I try to envision the day, at that point, a conference speaker, being able to travel a little bit more, take my wife with me, she'd be my travel buddy. That's part of my master plan there. I want to be able, I've told you guys before, I want to write 25 books. What I haven't told you is I'm hoping that 15 of them happen after I'm 65. When I have more experience. And right now, I'm just, you know, I don't have as much experience to be able to write, but then I will. And so once you've got that, then you begin to back it up. You picture that day, and do this with your spouse. With you and your spouse, just imagine together, if you're married, what that day looks like. And then you pull it back to about 10 years from now and say, okay, what do things have to look like in 10 years if we're going to get there in 65 years? Well, let me just pick a couple. Husband. I still have to be married to my wife. I have to be married to her in 10 years if I'm going to be married to her in December 8th of 2036. And so then I back it up to next year because I always do this at 65 and then I do it from 10 years from now and then I do it 1 year from now. So 1 year from now, we still need to be married. And I understand that I'm going to school. And part of going to school, what I didn't tell you about this, is I'm commuting to Seattle monthly. That's crazy. But that means if I'm going to be married, I'm going to have to really figure out how to love my wife because I'm going to be traveling so much. I'm going to be spending evenings studying. I'm going to be spending a day of the week, a week working on this stuff. I'm going to have to figure out how to stay married to my wife and stay closely connected to her for the next 1 year if I'm going to be married to her in 12/8/2036. You see that? You do that in every one of those roles. And I won't bore you by doing that with all of them, but that's what we do. We try to imagine that day. And the goal is not to become boring or completely inflexible or have a predictable life. The goal is to discover what's important to you. Like Paul said, I'm going to preach the gospel, he says in 1 Corinthians 9. I'm going to preach the gospel, and I'm going to run this race straight, not aimlessly. I'm going to throw punches that hit in the face, not punches that are wild in the air. I'm running this thing straight. And you try to picture what that's like and you intentionally plan. Now, here's a couple of important things. Make sure you plan in here intentional rest, intentional fun. I'm not trying to suck the life out of us in doing this. This should actually give us margin. Because as we focus on those few fit roles that we have within who we are, and we focus right on those, we say no to all the other stuff. And by saying no to all the other stuff, we just opened up margin in our lives. And somebody comes into our lives and tries to give us something that's not important, we'd say, no, that's not here. And now you can intentionally plan fun and release valves. I've told you guys before, there's two things that I do for fun. I ride my bike, and not with any of you. And let me tell you why. I mentioned this in a service a couple weeks ago that I like to be a loner. I'll tell you guys why. Because if I ride my bike with you, it's work. Do you get that? That's why I don't ride my bike with anybody from Riverview. I go ride my bike with my kids. I go ride my bike by myself. Last year, my wife and I rode bikes in the mountains in Colorado, and we're going to do it again in June this year. But I don't ride with any of you. It's a release valve for me. The other second thing I do, I work on my yard. That's actually a hobby of mine now, and I love it. I'm out there constantly working my yard. I've become that guy, but I can think, and I can pray, and I can plan, I can rest, and I love doing that. You plan those release valves into your world. And now, once you've done that, you go through with all those actions. Now, let me go to the next page. Here's why. Stephen Covey. And I'm going to wrap this up in 1 minute, 2 minutes. Stephen Covey says, when you do this, you can now ask this question of what's important. If you go on, you're on page 11 here, you look at the four quadrants. Look at quadrant one. This is the stuff that's important and not urgent. This is the most important quadrant. This is important stuff that's not urgent. These are things that need to be done, but they don't need to be done right now. These are often overlooked. Examples are, I need to study the word with my kids. But is it urgent? Are the kids begging me to spend time in the words of them right now, in the word with them right now? This is things like exercise. It's important that you get exercise, but it's not urgent until the day you have a heart attack. It became urgent for me last year because my brother at the age 36 had a heart attack. All of a sudden, I got a physical, which I haven't had since high school. I had blood work done. I had everything tested, my cholesterol tested. That was not urgent to me at all. Exercise was not urgent for me at all. It became urgent. See, that's quadrant one. Quadrant two is important and urgent. All of a sudden, your brother has a heart attack, or you have a heart attack. All of a sudden, taking care of your health becomes urgent. These are sudden crisis, critical things. They demand they must be done right now. Quadrant three, unimportant and urgent. These are often important to someone else, and they're trying to make them important to you. Now, this is an important one. Now, your boss has the ability to do this to you because your boss makes it important and not urgent and important and urgent. But there are times where there are things outside of your realm of control that everybody else wants to make your problem. It's not your problem. Unimportant and urgent. Quadrant four, unimportant and not urgent. These are things that are a waste of time and energy. Here's the thing. Most people spend their time in quadrant two, in quadrant three, and then when they're stressed out, they go to quadrant four. Stephen Covey says we should spend our time in quadrant one and two with most of our time in quadrant one. Because if you don't spend time in quadrant one, everything in quadrant one gets pushed into quadrant two. And then you freak out. And see, that's what we do. We begin to order our worlds like this, and then we can say yes to the right things and no to the wrong things. And then I'm not even going to go through the bottom. I'll let you look at it when you get home. Once you're done with all of that, you look at those things, and you just simply start somewhere, because this can get overwhelming if you're not like me. I love this stuff. For some people, they hate this stuff. If you hate this stuff, you know, this will be helpful for you at the bottom. It just gives you some simple steps. Questions like, what do I need to start doing today? What do I need to stop doing today? That's probably more important than what I should start. What are you going to get rid of? What three things do I need that I don't have? What three things are distracting me? And things can be people. what three things do I need to accomplish something, or three things that I need to get out of my world. So anyway, so this is just a basic thing, synthesizing about 10 or 15 different people's ideas into one very fast way of looking at our lives. But I think that we spend so much time living in the now, and no matter what Miley Cyrus tells us, it's not about the climb, okay? So many of us, we focus on every single day just doing whatever we want to do in that moment, living in the now. I'm one of those people who think that we shouldn't live in the now. We live in the future, and then that tells us what to do now. And we live the now that way. We don't live in the past. We don't really live in the now. That's kind of reverse engineering your life. So I went really fast, and I went 36 minutes. I apologize. So instead of 30. So I'm going to pray, and then we're going to move on to the next stuff. God, we just pray that we would be people who do this. I love Paul's confidence where he says, I have finished the race. I have fought the good fight. I have kept the faith. He has such confidence in that. And so many people I meet, especially at the end of their lives, they don't have that confidence. And so we want to live lives, even as like James said, where we know that we can't say for sure what tomorrow will hold or next week will hold. But we do want to say that, Lord willing, we want to be in a certain place tomorrow and next week and on December 8th, 2036. Help us to be people who live like that with real purpose. Praise things in your son's name. Amen. Okay, so here's the deal. It's 9:52. We're going to just push this next session off like 5 minutes, and then we'll try to catch it up in the next one, okay? So that way you guys have time to go to the bathroom, get coffee, find your workshop. You should have on your piece of paper the workshop that you're going to. We tried to give everybody their choices as best as we could. So at 10:05, we're going to be starting your workshops, and you can find out where you're supposed to go from there. Cool? All right, we'll see you back here in a couple hours.